Warning, the following podcast features views and opinions that are not representative of the collective views of the Whispers groups. Some of these views may not be suitable for children. Accordingly, the producers and hosts of the Missy AE podcast must insist that no one attempt to take anything that is being said as representative of the views of any of the Whispers groups.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of the Missy AE podcast. Tonight, we bring to you Sports Whispers Weekly, where we have a lot on the plate tonight. We got the NHL trade deadline to talk about. We got WrestleMania. They had two nights of WrestleMania last week, including, well, I started talking a little bit about WrestleMania Night 1 during last week's show. There was also Night 2 to talk about. We have some surprising NFL and NBA retirements also to discuss. And right now, what seems to be like a complete acid trip on the Fight Network, or Triller Fight Club or something, that's already seen the likes of Pete Davidson, Snoop Dogg, and Steve Urkel apparently smoking a blunt with Snoop Dogg. I thought this was supposed to be a boxing fight, but apparently it's now all of a sudden turned into a smoke sesh. Anyways, I've got Lou on the line with me tonight. If you guys want to call in and talk some sports, you can call in at 657-383-1308. We will be live on the air for the next 2 hours before we go into the hour after show. A reminder for those of you who may have missed our Survivor Memories podcast this past Thursday, you can listen to it now, actually, on the archives where we discussed the Survivor One World season. It is now available on the archives on blogtalkradio.com/MissyAE or on iTunes by subscribing to Missy AE on iTunes, where you'll get access to all of our previous podcasts that we've done, the likes of Survivor, Big Brother, Amazing Race. We've also done a whole shitload of sports podcasts for the past however many years. I've lost track now. I figure we should get started now. Lou, do you have any idea about this Jake Paul Ben Askren fight that's supposed to be going on tonight? To where?
Yeah.
Now I guess they're having the Black Keys playing now. I thought we were gonna get straight into boxing. I was expecting to tune in to this boxing fight and seeing some boxing, you know, not seeing a whole entire skit involving Steve Urkel and Snoop Dogg smoking blunts.
I like the Black Keys, though. I mean, you gotta give me a little bit of that. But the other stuff, I think we can do without. That makes for a bad publicity stunt. Ugh.
Yeah, not just that, but they have Diplo and they have Pete Davidson doing commentary with Snoop Dogg.
Saturday Night Live? Oh, God.
You know, it's no wonder why nobody takes these celebrity fights seriously, because of shit like this.
And that's exactly what it was. Shit.
And you know, I've mentioned in the past that maybe perhaps the Paul brothers may have a legitimate shot at boxing careers, but Jake Paul is probably facing his toughest task tonight by taking on, a retired MMA fighter, Ben Askren. And I know Ben technically isn't really known for his stand-up. He's more known for his ground game in mixed martial arts. But I think Jake Paul is diving into a little bit of deeper waters here, because Askren, you know, he has trained to fight. He may not have necessarily trained for boxing, but he has had a boxing coach for his MMA career. So if I was Jake Paul, I probably would not be taking him lightly tonight, because even though he laid out Nate Robinson in his last fight, two rounds into a six-round fight, which, by the way, tonight's fight is supposed to be eight rounds. I would not count Ben Askren out, even though he is a severe underdog, apparently, in this fight.
Yes.
I guess kind of makes sense because Jake Paul is technically the bigger, you know, in size, bigger fighter. But, I mean, it's different when your first two fights have been against scrubs in boxing. You know, you're facing an actual mixed martial artist now. It's almost like if Jake Paul were to have faced Conor McGregor, you know, in Conor McGregor's first fight instead of Conor facing, you know, Floyd Mayweather, like he did. And we saw how he did against Floyd Mayweather. You know, his first professional fight against Floyd Mayweather, Conor McGregor, in a lot of people's eyes, was winning that fight before he gassed out. So now we got Jake Paul going against Ben Askren. And Dana White, UFC president Dana White, has gone on record saying that he would bet $1 million that Jake Paul loses to Ben Askren tonight.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would kind of agree with him. A lot of people are probably going to be sleeping on Askren, but Askren has apparently been very pissed off with how Jake Paul has handled the buildup to this fight. And it's almost as if, you know, the boxing world is basically looking down on mixed martial arts and basically saying that, you know, you're nowhere on our level, just regardless of, you know, regardless of the type of fighter you face, whether it's an amateur boxer or a professional boxer. So what are your thoughts, Lou? Do you think that they should be taking Ben Askren lightly here, or do you think there's real potential that that Jake Paul could get upset tonight? At least in
never
the
take an opponent lightly, no matter what the record. Yeah, never take an opponent lightly, no matter what the record says. I think that, you know, if you underestimate them, they're gonna surprise you, and you're gonna be like, uh-oh, we really screw this up. So never take an opponent lightly, even if it seems like a walk in the park. I see it happen too many times. And you know me with predictions. When I make them, they usually go the opposite direction. Anywho.
Yeah. But, you know, like I said, Askren, he's more known for his grappling. He's more known for being a grappler as opposed to a striker. However, you know, that doesn't mean he hasn't knocked out people before. He has knocked out opponents before in his mixed martial arts career. You know, as a mixed martial artist, of the 19 wins that he's had, 6 of them have come by knockout. So, you know, it's not something that should be taken lightly here, even though he's moving into the boxing world, which I assume this is probably going to be his only boxing fight, because quite frankly, you know, he looked at this when it first came up as an option. He took this fight as if it was going to be easy money. And reportedly, you know, there's a lot of money going down on this fight tonight, apparently. As far as the payday goes. You know, it's ridiculous, the fact that a fighter like Jake Paul, who is only 2-0, and he, you know, he's facing a guy who's never even fought in professional boxing. And
maybe they should fight Urkel.
Yeah. And
that's
yet, you know, now we're, you know, seeing something like this. I mean, let's put it into a little perspective here. This is the same boxing card that has Frank Mir on the card tonight, who is a former UFC heavyweight champion and, you know, has been known to knock out people. So, you know, it's just weird for me to see something like this, because usually when you fight someone on at an amateur level, you fight someone with a similar, you know, a similar skill set. And frankly, I'm just completely mindfucked, if you will, that or baffled too. That's another way to put it. That Jake Paul is considered a heavy favorite just because he's had two previous bouts. That one of them was one of them has been turned into an internet meme, and the other one, you know, was his first professional fight. And, you know, people wonder why boxing isn't taken seriously.
This may bring it to a new low right there.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I understand if you have celebrities, you know, like Jake Paul, take place in something like wrestling, like hell, his brother, Logan Paul, got involved at WrestleMania, where he ended up taking a stunner from Kevin Owens after being involved in the match between Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. You know, getting celebrities to get involved in something like wrestling is one thing where they can do certain spots and everything, but you know, to get into a boxing ring like this, it kind of embarrasses the sport a little bit.
It puts it to shame. That's what the problem is. You know, I mean, you know, what about also Fox's, you know, gimmick they came up with years ago?
I forget exactly what that was. What
celebrity
what
death match
thing was that? Yeah, but
celebrity death match.
That's not Fox. That's not Fox. That was MTV.
So that was Fox did also like a celebrity boxing thing as well, so that was kind of dumb too.
Oh, okay, that I didn't know. I didn't know that they did a celebrity boxing thing there as well. You know, if that's the case, you know, obviously Fox has moved on from it now. You know, they haven't. They basically decided that, you know, that they weren't really getting the ratings that was that would have come from that, so it kind of makes sense, you know, that they would move on. But you know, I guess it's just this whole thing where, you know, it's the Triller Fight Club, as they call it, which is basically run by celebrities, quite frankly, because there's no actual, you know, boxing commentator on tonight's show. There's no actual person with expertise on the panel tonight. You know, hell, I would even take Frank Mir, who's been in MMA, who's been on MMA commentary, or at least somebody, you know, who's on MMA, who's been on commentary for boxing or mixed martial arts, to actually comment about tonight's fight. And actually, it's not just one fight. Apparently, there are multiple fights tonight. But hell, you know, we've gone through 21 minutes already that this fight was supposed to have started, and Snoop is still talking and smoking a blunt. So this whole thing just seems like a gigantic acid trip, in all honesty. But anyways, let's move on from this. Hopefully, you know, if they finally do decide to air the fight, you know, maybe we will actually start talking about it. But until then, we are going to move on here. And the first thing I want to bring up is we're going over to the NFL, because we are going to discuss the trade deadline for the NHL. And the impact that we've seen from it. And there has been some impacts that have come from the trade deadline so far.
Yes.
but we do have a surprising retirement in the NFL with first the Patriots releasing Julian Edelman with a designated failed physical, and it has to do with his knee. Now, originally there was a lot of outrage because of this, because it has been reported, you know, that Edelman was thinking about retirement, and obviously, you know, he was still on a sizable contract to where the Patriots would be due for that money. But I guess there must have been some sort of agreement between the two parties to where Edelman helps them free up space, because they are still on the cap, I believe, for about there's about $2.6 million in dead cap that the Patriots have to eat when it comes to you know, releasing Edelman. But Edelman, I read, because of the fact that he was released in this capacity, he is eligible, I think, for like a $2 million injury insurance or something from the NFL. So technically he is still going to get paid even though he is heading towards retirement, because of the fact that he's having to retire due to injury. But I guess the biggest surprise is the fact that he's retiring, period, at the reaching the age of 35 in May. And there has been a lot of talk that, you know, once he gets released, he'll join Tom Brady down in Tampa eventually, once everything starts working out for him and whatnot. But I have actually read a couple reports that have said that Julian Edelman's injury is serious enough to where he's basically going to be unable to play football. Well, he's going to be unable to play at a high level ever again. And it's to the point where surgery will only lessen the pain. It won't solve the problem. And obviously at the age of 30, he's going to be 35 by the time next season would roll around. And it kind of makes sense for him, if he's going to have to deal with all these injuries, it kind of makes sense for him to retire at this point in time. And I mean, with him retiring, that pretty much closes the book, you know, on all of the big New England stars of the past couple of years. I mean, they do still have a couple of people from the multiple Super Bowl wins of the second dynasty, but I mean, this one's more significant because he was a seventh round pick back in 2009. This guy was supposed to go nowhere in his career. He ends up finishing his career with 620 catches for 6,822 yards, 36 receiving touchdowns. He has a total of 2,612 return yards. Now, keep in mind, he was a returner early on in his career. And he also has a career four returns for a touchdown as well. And actually, let me make sure that is up to date, actually. Yeah, 36. Is up to date. What he's most known for was his postseason accomplishments, though. He had five touchdowns throughout all of his postseason career. Keep in mind, 2 years he did not play in the postseason due to injury. He has had five touchdowns passing in his career, or receiving in his career, in the playoffs, with one rushing touchdown as well. He caught a combined 118 catches for 1,442 yards, with an average of 12.2 yards per catch.
in his career in the playoffs. And not only does he have three Super Bowl rings, but he was also named the Super Bowl MVP of Super Bowl 53. Now, Lou, what were your first thoughts when you heard about this shocking news that Julian Edelman, not only was he released, but it was actually a precursor to his retirement?
I'm thrilled because you know I feel about the Patriots. So, no offense, of course, but you know how I feel about the Patriots and how they have the dynasty over the last 300 years. And whatnot. It is a little surprising, though. I thought maybe he was going to go another couple of years. You know, he's what, you said 35?
Yeah, he'll be 35 in May, next month,
okay.
Actually.
That's like borderline, really, for between football, basketball, and hockey. So, and when you do get injured, you don't heal as quick once you hit that certain age. I mean, if you were like 25, yeah, you probably would be able to play more. But but that's the way he feels about it because the health is more important to an athlete. And if he took any more hits, it might be even more severe. So
yeah,
in a sense, maybe I think surprised, yes, but I also get the point of why he did it. Now the question is, this came up a few days ago: is he a Hall of Famer? Because there are some people that say no.
That was something I was about to bring up as my next question.
Oops.
Because it's a good thing you brought it up. It's a good thing you brought it up actually, because I was going to bring it up as my next question, and I may sound a little biased here, but I honestly think he is a Hall of Famer, not because of his regular season accomplishments, because of his postseason accomplishment.
Yes.
And I think he will make it in specifically because of that, because he was the type of player that was always going balls to the wall every single year. He played through God knows how many injuries in his career, not just during the regular season, but also during the playoffs. And a Hall of Famer said the exact same thing. I forget exactly who it was that was asked about it, but there was a Hall of Famer who spoke up about it earlier this week, and they believe that he will eventually get into the Hall of Fame. Mm. That obviously it won't be first ballot. It won't be first ballot, but eventually he will. Eventually, he will get into the Hall of Fame.
I was going to say, do you think he'd be a first-ballot Hall of Famer? I do not think so, even though despite the fact with the three Super Bowls, and, of course, was the hero of Super Bowl 51 or whatever, when he helped launch the comeback against the Atlanta Falcons, who just folded up and died in the second half. But first ballot Hall of Famer, no, I think the second Hall of Famer, a second ballot. So let's say, okay, we're in 2021 now. You got to wait at least 5 years to get in. So maybe like in 2027 or 2028, I think he'll make it. And I'll be almost 60 by then. Ugh, that's disgusting.
Yeah, because obviously, like you said, you have to wait 5 years before you can officially get the call. Let me put it this way. Granted, he doesn't have any of the All-Pros and he doesn't have any Pro Bowls, although I will say Edelman should have been considered for those for the Pro Bowls that during the seasons that he played exceptional. Let me put it like this. There are many highlights that he had during the postseason, like, for example, the catch that surprised everybody that it was ruled a catch when a lot of people thought that he dropped it and instead he didn't. I think it was against Atlanta.
Yeah.
That one catch ultimately turned around all the momentum that Atlanta had. It's these highlight reel catches that he made in the postseason that makes me think he will ultimately get in. Because think about it. You know, Calvin Johnson, you know, he retired. This is really weird for me to compare Calvin Johnson to Julian Edelman. But Calvin Johnson, you know, he had all these all pros. He had three-time All-Pro for first team and a second-team All-Pro. He made the Pro Bowl six times. He was the receiving yards leader twice, also an NFL receptions leader and receiving touchdowns co-leader, yada, 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 you know, 80-some-odd touchdowns in the regular season. But what did he do in the postseason? Never even made it close. Calvin Johnson was only in the postseason twice.
And far from memorable.
In my opinion, I think what should constitute a Hall of Famer is what they do in the clutch. What they do in the postseason where everything matters. You know, because regular season, you get so many games. Postseason,
yes.
You get one loss, you're done.
Yeah,
you're done for that postseason. That's why I think Edelman will eventually get in, mainly because of his postseason performances.
Yes,
because he was when you think about it, he was Tom Brady's most dependable receiver in the second dynasty. When there was somebody that Brady needed to go to get a catch, Edelman was that guy. And I know people are saying, well, if Edelman is in the Hall of Fame, then Gary Clark needs to be put in the Hall of Fame, yada, yada, yada. Ultimately, you know, we got to keep in mind this is a completely different era of football. And Edelman was a guy, like I said, that you would go to if you needed to get a crucial play done. And for him to not mention be a seventh round pick, 232nd overall. This is a guy who originally was supposed to be maybe just a practice squad guy at best in his career. And he ended up playing 12 seasons. Well, I shouldn't say he ended up, because he did play a little bit this season. He ended up playing 12 seasons with the Patriots when he shouldn't have even played one full season, according to, to many draft experts at the time. That's ultimately why I think he will probably get in at some point. You know, it's probably going to be a wait because, you know, there are going to be other people there that are going to be more deserving of a Hall of Fame spot than him. But I believe he will eventually get in. And when it comes to this, now it kind of makes sense why the Patriots didn't get rid of N'Keal Harry right now.
Right.
Because now they're in need of that wide receiver depth now. I mean, you take a look at who they have currently. They got Kendrick Bourne. They signed Nelson Aguilar. You know, they have Jacoby Myers on the depth chart. You know, they need basically all the guys that they can, the best wide receiver core that they can potentially have. And there's also the potential that maybe perhaps, you know, Harry can finally turn things around, because it seemed like he was starting to get used a little bit more once Cam Newton started working with him. So, you know, who knows, maybe with a potentially 100% Cam Newton, this upcoming season. Maybe perhaps we'll start to see more out of N'Keal Harry, even though he'll probably be, you know, the number four option. You know, there's still a lot of things to take away from this retirement, because let's face it, you know, Edelman was on his final year of his deal.
Right.
The Patriots are probably going to move away from him anyways at some point. So it just kind of sucks, I guess, the fact that he had to come out of the league because of retirement, because of injury.
Right.
But he did say he wanted to retire a Patriot, and now he gets the chance to do so.
Right.
I guess the biggest question, Lou, apart from Hall of Famer, that I want to ask is, do you think he eventually, before Brady retires, he comes out of retirement, like, say, maybe next year, and tries one more go at it with Brady? Or do you think, because of the lingering problems, that he really is done?
Well, with the problem lingering, yeah, I would say he is done. I get the thing that, you know, he might want to just try it one more time with Brady, but I think the risk is too great. So I think that he is going to just say that, even though, you know, he's not gonna pull, like, you know, like a Gronkowski and retire and then come back. So I think that for his own safety, no, he's gonna call it quits.
Yeah, the big difference, that's another thing that people talk about is, well, Gronkowski did the same thing. The difference between him and Gronkowski is Gronkowski was more burnt out as opposed to, you know, actually being injured. I mean, he did play one more year before after having back surgery, and then he ended up retiring. But the main difference that I got, the main feeling that I got from Gronkowski when he left at first was that he was burnt out. He was more burnt out as opposed to actually being injured and requiring surgery. With Edelman, like I mentioned previously, Edelman, he's just, his knee is at the point where, like I said, you know, surgery will only alleviate the pain. It won't get rid of the problem. So, you know, he's basically going to be having knee problems for the rest of his life, from what it sounds like. So, you know, he's not going to be in any condition to provide meaningful minutes out there on the field. So if he's not going to be able to give it his all, why even play the sport any longer? You see what I'm saying? Kind of makes sense now that he's retiring. And, you know, he could have easily retired with the Patriots and, you know, without being released. And, you know, they would have to pay him all of the money that he was owed. But he decided to give the Patriots a solid and, you know, give them that cap space. And he'll still technically get paid through the injury insurance by the league. So, you know, he's still going to get that money regardless.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, you know, it'll end up helping the Patriots in the long run by giving them extra cap space, basically.
Yes.
All right. We do have, obviously, the featured game currently for the NBA right now on ABC is the Boston Celtics and the Golden State Warriors. Oh, excuse me. The Golden State Warriors at the half have a 6-point lead over the Boston Celtics, 66-60. Jason Tatum leading the way in the first half for the Boston Celtics, 23 points and 6 rebounds. Over on Golden State, as expected, Steph Curry with 22 points on 3-for-7 shooting from 3-point range. We also have Kent Bazemore with 14 points and Andrew Wiggins with 12 points out of that starting five. As far as Boston goes, any extras, Peyton Pritchard with 8 points off the bench. We also got Jabari Parker, the newly signed Jabari Parker, with 4 points off the bench. Kemba Walker with 9, Marcus Smart with 7, and also no Jaylen Brown tonight for the Boston Celtics. So the Celtics are a little shorthanded, but the Warriors, they are also playing without Kelly Oubre as well tonight. Well, Kelly
depleted.
Oubre also, yeah, they are depleted, but they are still holding a 6-point advantage at the half over the Boston Celtics. Some other scores from around the NBA before we dive a little bit more into the NBA. We have late in the third quarter, the Washington Wizards with a 10-point lead over the Detroit Pistons, 86-76. Late in the fourth, we have the Chicago Bulls with a narrow 5-point advantage over the Cleveland Cavaliers, 82-77. And the Memphis Grizzlies, with about 9.5 minutes to go in the first half, with a 7-point lead over the Milwaukee Bucks. Some finals from earlier today. Well, actually, just one final, I guess, from earlier today. The L.A. Lakers over the Utah Jazz, 127-115. And another thing, actually, this is significantly good news for the Lakers, is that Anthony Davis has been cleared for full on-court activity in his rehab from his calf injury. So it is good news for Anthony Davis that he'll be nearing his return in the near future, which is actually even better news for the Lakers because they're still out without LeBron James. And looking at where they stand right now in the Western Conference, they're currently in the fifth seed, they're about 4 games out of potentially going into the play-in tournament. So you want to stay out of that play-in tournament. So a return for Anthony Davis would be surely welcomed by the Lakers coming up here.
Yeah.
LaMarcus,
I got a question. That's what I was about to bring up. I think you were about to mention LaMarcus Aldridge and his sudden retirement. With him retiring, not that I don't think he should have played anyway due to his condition. Is this going to do the Nets some serious damage in the weeks ahead? I mean, you know, they've been battling back and forth, you know, between first and second all year, all season with the Sixers. Is this going to do some damage to their playoff chances now that he's gone?
I wouldn't say it's going to do specific damage to their playoff chances. I think they're definitely a playoff team regardless of whether or not they had him or not. I think what it's going to do is it's going to give the minutes that he basically was taking away from certain fighters, it's just going to redistribute those minutes. So I don't know if I would necessarily say that it's going to really, you know, it's going to really take away anything from their playoff chances. Because let me take a look here real quick, actually. You know, he was averaging 13.5 points per game, 4.5 rebounds, 1.9 assists. And actually, let me check. When did he sign with Brooklyn?
About 10 days ago.
10 days ago. Okay, so that means
or
he probably would have. Hang on. Let me see. Okay, so they they parted ways, or he parted ways with the Spurs on March 11th. He signed. Okay, so yeah, he parted ways with the Spurs on the 11th, and it said his last bit of playing time that he started playing once again on on April 1st against the Hornets. And considering it's been a considerable amount of time since the deadline already, so basically we could say that his first game was against the Hornets with the Nets. The five games that he played, he had 11 points twice. He had 12 points, he had 8 points, and he had 22 points.
Yes.
So I think based on the upside, the fact that he can still score 20 points per game, maybe that might hurt the Nets in the long run. But at the same time, you know, what this basically is going to mean is that they're going to have to, you know, redistribute that playing time now. And, you know, they're not going to be able to give certain guys, you know, the rest that they would normally have. You know, that would mean players like Nicholas Claxton would see more playing time, Jeff Green, Blake Griffin. Because let's face it, that the bigs, they were already getting a certain amount of shared playing time as it was with the addition of Blake Griffin. But now that they had added LaMarcus Aldridge, you know, that was basically going to take minutes away from DeAndre Jordan. That would have taken minutes away from Nicholas Claxton. And yeah, you know, let's keep in mind you still have DeAndre Jordan on that roster.
Yeah,
so,
I know.
You know, it is definitely going to hurt the Nets, but I don't think it's going to hurt them in a way to where, you know, they'll slide to where they're in the play-in tournament or something. Because in order to be in the play-in tournament, you have to be below 500 at this point in the Eastern Conference. And
right,
the Nets, you know, there's no shot in hell that the Nets are going to finish below 500 in the in the East. So, and you know, just looking where they are right now, they currently sit 2.5 games ahead of the third ranked Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't see, with the amount of talent on that roster, I don't see them moving from the number two spot. I think, if anything, if they move at all, it'll be up. It'll be, you know, to grab the number one seed from the 76ers.
Yeah. Now, what about the Knicks' chances? I mean, because they're really being a surprise team right now. They're 3 games above 500. Anything from, I think, fourth on down is very, very tight. So I think they're on their best winning streak in 7 years. So, you know, what do you make of their chances?
Knicks, I think will barring a tragic barring a gigantic collapse, you know, I think that we will definitely see the Knicks in the playoffs this year.
I see.
Assuming that Mitchell Robinson is potentially going to come back at some point, I think he will probably provide a boost to the Knicks' chances. I don't really know if I would consider them legit contenders, though.
No, of course not. That's getting carried away. But, you know, just to make the playoffs for the first time in 7 years, when nobody thought they were going to do, you'll pardon the expression, jack shit, I think they're surprising the league.
Yeah, no, I do think they're definitely going to be, barring any sort of gigantic collapse, I do think they will definitely be in the playoffs, especially considering they are going to get Mitchell Robinson. It sounds like they are going to get him back May 2nd. Hang on, I think, do we have JB joining us?
Got somebody.
JB, is that you?
JB, is that you?
No, this is not JB. This is John.
Oh, I'm sorry, John. You have the same area code as one of our callers. I apologize.
Oh no, that's all right.
But
I was calling to see, the whole thing with KD. Let me ask you this. With KD having his Achilles heel hurting, do you think that's affecting the way his cock works?
Okay. Yeah, we are, sorry about that, folks. That is, actually, you know what, while I'm at it here, let me, there we go. That should solve that problem. Sorry about that, guys. Was not expecting a call like that. But it happens, I guess.
I've had to.
Anyways, going back to what I was saying about the Knicks, they are expected to have Mitchell Robinson back on May 2nd. So, if anything, he would provide a boost, basically, to their output. And considering where they are right now, they are currently in the sixth spot, 30 and 27. The team right below them, the Miami Heat, they're about 1.5 games behind the New York Knicks. So, like I said, assuming there's some sort of collapse to where somehow the 10th place Raptors, who are sitting at 23-34, end up, if somehow the Knicks end up falling that low to where they fall below the Raptors,
yeah,
barring some sort of collapse like that, I think the Knicks will probably be fine.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying, they're going to be contenders, although this season you never know what's going to happen, but... that is pushing them. But, to see them go from, where they've been the last 7 years up to now, that's got to be, I think, one of the surprises in the league.
Yeah, I think it's definitely one of the bigger surprises around the league. You take a look at what the Knicks have done under Coach Thibodeau this year. And considering the fact that the Knicks have just played tremendous. Well, yeah, and another thing, too, is, the defensive mindset of Coach Thibodeau has actually improved the Knicks to where, we're seeing a lot more closer games out of the Knicks organization compared to what we've seen in the past. So, I definitely think that the Knicks are definitely heading in the right direction, and I believe I said this, at the beginning when they hired Thibodeau. I think it was the right move for them. If there is somebody who can get the younger players going, it's definitely Coach Thibodeau, because we saw what he was able to do in Boston as an assistant with some of the players that he coached as an assistant coach with the Celtics. So, and also not to mention what he was able to do in Chicago when Derrick Rose was at his peak. I definitely think that the Knicks are definitely headed in the right direction. And speaking of the Celtics have started out the second half tying up the Golden State Warriors 68 apiece to start out the second half here. Now, from what it was said about Aldridge, apparently he played through an irregular heartbeat during the Nets loss on April 10th to the Lakers, and reportedly the situation became worse afterwards. He is doing better now, though, and he said, "Though I'm better now, what I felt with my heart that night was still one of the scariest things I have experienced."
And he ended up missing time during the 2017 season due to an irregular heartbeat as well. And it was an issue that he's had to navigate for much of his career. So, you know, it probably once it happened this time, he was probably looking at his career and saying, you know, it's not really worth staying around when, you know, he's going to have these problems. So it only makes sense for him to,
yes,
you know, to basically hang things up at this point.
Right. I mean, all careers do have to come to an end, of course.
Obviously. Yeah, obviously. All careers do have to come to an end at some point. So,
unless you're Tom Brady, who wants to play till he's 120 years old.
Yeah, exactly. Now, taking a look at Aldridge's career, though, he spent his time throughout the different teams, the Portland Trail Blazers, for the first 10 or so years of his career. Then he went to the Spurs for another 6, and then he ended up, of course, ending his career with the Brooklyn Nets at the tail end of this season. For his career averages, he finishes his career with an average of 19.4 points per game, 8.2 rebounds, and 2 assists per game as well. And looking at the awards, you know, he was an All-Star from 2012 to 2019. He did miss the 2017 All-Star game, so he wasn't an All-Star then. He has been named a member of the All-NBA second team two different times, as well as the All-NBA third team 3 different times, as well as being a part of the All-Rookie first team back in 2007. And he also wasn't really, he never won an NBA title at all during his career. So, you know, I guess maybe perhaps we should ask the same question here that we asked about Julian Edelman. Would you consider LaMarcus Aldridge to be an NBA Hall of Famer at some point?
That's a tough one. I think he would, but I don't know, you know, just exactly at what point. I mean, I don't think he'll be a first-ballot Hall of Famer. You know, like Edelman, I don't think he'll be the best. I think, you know, it's going to be done, you know, it might take him like another 5 years on top of that. I mean, LaMarcus was good, but he wasn't, you know, spectacular. He wasn't, you know, he was no Michael Jordan.
Yeah, no, obviously.
Or a Kevin Durant, or, you know.
But if
so,
you, if you look at his numbers, though, he averaged about 20 point, and let's start with the playoffs, actually. Throughout, 9 different trips to the playoffs throughout his career, he averaged about 20.8 points per game, 8.5 rebounds per game, and 1.7 assists per game throughout his career in the playoffs, while shooting at a 45.5% clip. Now, of course, in the regular season, he averaged 19.4 points per game, 8.2 rebounds, and 2 assists per game, while shooting at a 49.1% clip.
Okay.
Well,
so,
those are decent numbers.
They are, yeah. I don't know if the lack of an NBA title will hurt him at all.
That might play a factor.
Yeah, I don't know if
it
will hurt him at all. But keep in mind, you know, he does have the All-Star game.
But then again, Patrick Ewing, I think, is the Basketball Hall of Fame, and he has won a title. So, you know, anything can, you know, come of that.
I mean, if you take, you know, if you take awards into consideration and stuff like that, then a lot of people would believe that, you know, he has a better chance than Julian Edelman does in the NFL of potentially being in the Hall of Fame, considering the fact that he has those All-NBA team awards, you know, he has all those All-Star game appearances. You know, maybe perhaps that would do wonders for his, you know, for his Hall of Fame chances. I mean, I guess I could kind of see him potentially being a Hall of Famer, but I obviously it won't be, you know, a first ballot. I think it'll be somewhere down the line where he eventually makes it in. Now, I don't know. Is there a statute of limitations in the NBA in regards to how long?
I think there is. I think it might be similar to baseball.
So where it's 10 years?
Yes.
10 years from when you become first eligible. So,
right.
You know, I could see LaMarcus Aldridge making it just based off of his numbers alone. I mean, obviously, you know, the lack of an NBA title may play a factor in that potentially. All right, staying in the NBA, you know, as I mentioned before, James Wiseman, he suffered a torn meniscus in his right knee last Saturday, and there was an expectation that he would miss the rest of the regular season, and obviously, of course, he is. He had suffered the injury early in the second quarter of last Saturday's win against the Houston Rockets for the Golden State Warriors. It sounds like, for the most part, he is done for at least the regular season. I don't think anything was said at all about playoffs, but I would assume, considering it's a meniscus tear, that he's probably done for the playoffs as well.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of sucks for a rookie to have his rookie season end prematurely. Taking a look here at what he was able to do this season: 39 games, 11.5 points, 5.8 rebounds, and he was shooting at a 51.9% rate with 31.6% of three-point shots going in as well.
Keep in mind one thing, though. I mean, it's not like the case with Ben Simmons where he didn't even get a chance to play in his rookie year. So you have to look at it that way, too. I mean, he got injured the first
Yeah, of course.
He got injured in practice.
Yeah. So there's definitely, I mean, he ended up getting the play, but obviously, you know, his rookie of the year potential is out the window now with him not being able to finish the season. And that could actually play a big role in the rest of the rest of the Golden State Warriors' chances this season, because the Warriors, they currently sit at 28-28. You know, Wiseman was playing a big role in not just their big game, but the fact that he was a big who could also shoot threes.
Yes.
You know, that's going to alter that's going to alter their plans for different lineups that they would potentially have him be a part of when it comes to shooting. So, you know, that's definitely going to have them change. That's going to have them change different things different lineups that they're going to end up sending out there. And actually, that lead has now grown. Boston now up 78-71 with about 7 minutes to go in the third quarter here. Still plenty of time, but we're starting to see a little bit of separation in this matchup. Also, some injury news. The Jazz have announced that Donovan Mitchell will be reevaluated in a
week
after he suffered a significant right lower ankle sprain. And according to Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN, Donovan Mitchell will reportedly miss Woj. It's been reported that he will reportedly miss several games. Donovan Mitchell sidelined. Expect to see more out of Jordan Clarkson and Joe Ingles during this time off. And you know, who knows, with the Jazz currently sitting atop the Western Conference right now, they may make the decision to just take it easy with Donovan Mitchell's rehab. And for all we know, maybe perhaps if this lineup plays exceptionally well in his absence, you know, we could potentially see them decide to maybe sit him out a couple more games than he needs to, just to ensure that he ends up coming back at full health. So what do you think about the impact this injury could have, Lou? Because you have the Phoenix Suns breathing down the Utah Jazz. They're only a game behind the Jazz right now. You got the LA Clippers also in the mix potentially.
Choke.
You know, I know we asked this story or we asked this question previously on our shows, but could we potentially, or, you know, can the Utah Jazz keep up this level of gameplay?
I believe so. The Jazz, yes. The Clippers, they'll choke in the second or third round. They always do. So you can rule them out. But the Jazz, I do see it. You know, this is the strong, they've ever been. I mean, you know, it would have been nice to, see if, you know, Malone or Stockton would have done it when they were on the Jazz. But, you know, I think this will make up for it.
Yeah. We do have our first fight officially done. With Joe Fournier defeating Raycon, he calls himself. I guess he's a reggaeton performer from Colombia. Very popular, I guess, apparently around those parts. By a corner decision, a corner retirement, basically. They threw in the towel after two rounds with Joe Fournier winning by forfeit, technically. So up next, it looks like we have Steve Cunningham against Frank Mir. That is expected to take place at any moment now. Frank Mir, a former mixed martial artist and professional wrestler who recently competed for Bellator MMA in their heavyweight division. Steve Cunningham is a pro boxer who held the IBF cruiserweight title twice between 2007 and 2011. His last fight was in 2017, a loss to Andrew Tabidi for the NABF cruiserweight title back then. Now, this is a bit of a drastic difference here, because you're technically having a heavyweight fight a cruiserweight here. Although, obviously, you know, he's probably built up weight since, but
there's a word for
that. You
know,
this is a – I would kind of have to think that there's a drastic power difference here between Mir and Cunningham.
Well, that wasn't what I was thinking, but I get it.
Because, I mean, granted Mir has never fought before – professional in boxing in his career, but he has knocked out multiple people in his MMA career. So
I see.
And you also have to consider the drastic weight difference too. That the lowest that Mir has fought, he's never fought at anything other than the heavyweight division. So we're looking at a drastic weight difference here. All right. Sticking with the NBA here for a little bit, I mentioned previously Jabari Parker made his Celtics debut tonight. He did sign a 2-year deal yesterday with the Boston Celtics. And obviously this is Boston's response to losing out on the buyout market for LaMarcus Aldridge and Andre Drummond. I guess apparently Jabari Parker was the only option that they felt they could do. But I think it's kind of interesting that they signed him to a 2-year deal, though, because usually most of these contracts that are signed are only for the rest of the season. But with them signing Jabari Parker to a longer deal, I'm kind of wondering if maybe perhaps they feel that they can get Jabari back to the type of player that he was when he's able to stay healthy. Because when he's able to stay healthy, he averages around 15 points per game. And when you think about it, it could actually be a kind of sneaky move for their bench, because he would provide some, you know, he would provide some depth for them off of their bench, which the one thing that the Celtics do need is scoring off the bench. So what are your thoughts about the Celtics taking a seemingly investment in Jabari Parker? Because keep in mind, this is a guy who used to be he was a former second overall pick by the Milwaukee Bucks back in 2014.
Right.
And
he's taking a pretty big risk, though.
I mean, kind of, yeah. You know, this isn't a guy who the most games that he played was in his second year, where he played 76 games. And since then, he hasn't even reached the 60-game played mark ever since 2016. So, you know, the question,
amazing,
there is a question of how healthy he can stay. Yeah, granted, it was a long time ago, exactly. There is a question as to how healthy he can stay, and if he can stay healthy, can he still produce? Because another thing to keep in mind is he's only played in 3 games this year.
Yeah.
3 games for the Sacramento Kings, where he was very sparingly used, about 9 minutes per game before they ultimately ended up waiving him and basically moving on. So, you know, there is still some questions as to whether or not he can stay healthy, but if he can, and if he can get back to the type of production that he was used to providing, this could be a pretty sneaky addition by the Celtics, who are in need of scoring off of that bench.
Yes.
And actually, looking at him just now, he did just get fouled, so he is headed to the free throw line.
And there's a 4-point lead
for the Boston Celtics. Yeah, with a 4-point lead for the Golden State Warriors. And what a 3-pointer by Curry. You know, it doesn't matter how much Curry is guarded on a shot. It really seems like he can basically nail them from anywhere. He can nail them from half court. He can nail them from after being guarded for the entire possession. You know, he could have 2 hands in his face and probably still make the shot.
Maybe even blindfolded.
I don't think. Well, maybe. I don't know if we could go that far, but maybe, perhaps.
Yeah.
You know, there may be something that a lot of people don't realize about the Warriors is they're actually being carried a lot by Curry with the absence of Klay Thompson. So,
I mean, Everton's confidence is hurt. That's not the same team.
No, exactly. That's not the same team at all. And, you know, as I said previously, when we talked about the Warriors heading into the draft, if they were able to, if they drafted James Wiseman like they did, and they were able to keep everybody healthy, you could be going back to looking at that scary Golden State Warriors team like they were during their championship runs. Because you could kind of argue the one true thing that they were really missing during those championship runs where they won those titles was an impact big man. And that's somebody that James Wiseman, once he's able to develop, that is somebody that he is probably going to turn into. So, you know, it's definitely once they're able to get back to full strength, I have a feeling that we're probably going to be looking at Golden State being back in the hunt on a regular basis if everybody can officially stay healthy. All right, and also one report has been out that the Miami Heat, they have given Victor Oladipo permission to meet with a knee and quad specialist before a timetable for his return is given. And considering the severity of the injury that he suffered a couple seasons ago on the same leg, which was a ruptured quad tendon, it's understandable that both he and the Heat would leave no stone unturned throughout this whole thing. So as a result of this, granted he did not travel with the Heat for their current four-game road trip, he remains without a timetable for his return. So in his absence, expect Tyler Herro and Goran Dragic to pick up more minutes, and Kendrick Nunn now may be able to rejoin the rotation as a response to this. Now, diving into the NHL, which obviously the biggest news of the week was the NHL trade deadline. But first, a notable note with his play tonight, Patrick Marleau of the San Jose Sharks has officially tied Gordie Howe's all-time games played record by playing in his 1,767th career NHL game. So it's a notable record considering how long it's taken for somebody to even get to that height for games played. Also, the NHL announced that the return to play of the Vancouver Canucks has been delayed from yesterday, as they were previously supposed to have returned to action yesterday. That, of course, ended up not taking place. As they were scheduled to play against Edmonton, but that contest has since been postponed. It did say that a revised schedule for teams in the Scotia North Division was expected to come yesterday. I have not seen it, so I don't know if it was put out there. Lou, do you have any information on that?
Well, I heard they were supposed to play tomorrow, but I heard that was pushed back too.
Well, I would assume it probably would just based on you know, all of the COVID cases that have been going around that organization. You know,
the Devils now.
It just kind of seems like it's not gonna be a situation that's gonna be resolved quickly.
Yeah, I know. The thing is, though, what do you do about, you know, because the players are supposed to start in mid-May, and the Canucks won't be – they want the Canucks to play the full 56-game schedule. So, you know, what do you do?
Well, my understanding of it is that they would still play the full schedule. It's just that the Canucks, you know, the Scotia North Division – Unless, of course, unless those games end up being inconsequential. You know, like...
I mean, of no merit.
Yeah, like it would have no merit, you know, like there wouldn't be a difference between whether or not they make the playoffs or they don't make the playoffs.
Right, if they don't make the playoffs, I don't think you should even bother. I mean, because that's what happened with the NBA last year. When they, because when their season got disrupted, they say, like, okay, well, we know we didn't, you know, finish, but you know what, you guys aren't going to the playoffs anywho, so, like, yeah, forget you. We're just going to concentrate on the teams that are either going to make the playoffs or are just on the outside looking in. If you're like 10-45, yeah, forget it. You're not worth it. So they can look at it, they can look at it that way, because I don't think the NHL would want to delay this season and have a collision course with the Olympics in July, assuming that goes through. In other words, Steve, do we have a problem or do we have a problem?
Yeah, no, we definitely there is a problem, at least when it comes to scheduling, because another thing to keep in mind too is the fact that, you know, maybe perhaps some of those teams that would normally have played the Canucks during these games that have been missed, you know, maybe perhaps those teams may need those games in order to potentially either stay in the playoff hunt or make the playoffs in general.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of variables that come in regards to this stuff. So, you know, it wouldn't shock me at all if maybe perhaps they just delay the Scotia North playoffs. I mean, granted, it is going to maybe add a bit of a extended delay to where teams would, you know, if a team sweeps their respective division series, you know, there would be a longer wait. Another thing that I think they may potentially try to do is they might try to space out the games of the first round a little bit longer. Because, you know, usually it's every other day. It's every other day that teams play. So, like, if a team plays on a Monday, they would then play on a Wednesday after that for game two and stuff like that. Something tells me that maybe perhaps if there is a significant delay between, you know, the Scotia North Division finishing their season and then starting the playoffs, you know, maybe perhaps we might see something to where they may extend the time in between for the rounds of the other teams.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
It's
that's
a complicated scenario. I understand that.
Potentially make the most sense, because at the same time, you know, it would kind of give teams... It would kind of prevent them, you know, from obviously if they were gonna finish off their schedule, like if they were gonna sweep their respective playoff round, you know, then they would be waiting God knows how long to end up facing the winner of the Scotia North playoffs, you know, so it would provide an even longer wait time as opposed to somebody or as opposed to a team that would normally sweep a regular schedule for the playoffs, if that makes any sense. Because of the delay that, because of the potential delay that from the Scotia North that would ensue. So I guess, you know, as things go further, maybe perhaps we'll find out more information. But I would assume that if anything, what would probably happen is that they would just have a delayed start to the Scotia North playoff, essentially.
Right.
Unless, like I said, you know, those games wouldn't prove to be consequential at all.
Right. In other words, if they're meaningless, why bother?
Exactly.
Yes, that's what I thought. All right, I got to back out for a little while because I may have another show to do, but if that goes wrong, I'll return, and I'll try to return within a half hour.
All right, Luke, I'll keep an eye out here for you.
If anything goes wrong, I'll be right back.
Okay. Well, while we are waiting on Lou to see if he ends up rejoining us, let's talk a little bit about WrestleMania 37. WrestleMania 37, apart obviously from the fact that they had to deal with rain, in my opinion, wasn't that bad at all. You know, I've definitely seen worse WrestleManias. Considering this was a two-night thing like last year, you know, I kind of felt like maybe perhaps apart from certain matches last year, it sort of seemed like this year's WrestleMania was a little bit better in regards to the match quality. Obviously, the first night we had Bobby Lashley defeating Drew McIntyre with the Hurt Lock to successfully defend his WWE Championship, which kind of shocked me, to be perfectly honest, you know, because I did not see him at all defending his title like that. I really thought that the way they were drawing up Drew McIntyre, that it was going to be basically where he would, you know, finally get his big win in front of a packed audience or an audience of some kind whatsoever. So the fact that he was able the fact that they decided to keep it on Lashley kind of surprised me, especially with them breaking up the Hurt business. You know, usually when Vince likes to set things a certain way, certain things into motion, usually it has a big payoff to where, you know, if a stable splits up, you know, they end up losing their championships or whatever championships are held by the respected members of that stable. So the fact that, you know, the Hurt business had just split up, obviously, in my mind, there were two things that were going to happen. Either Lashley was going to get screwed out of the title because of the Hurt business being bitter, or the whole Hurt business thing being split up was all going to be a ruse, and that was going to allow Shelton Benjamin and Cedric Alexander to come down and interfere on behalf of Bobby Lashley. So the fact that that didn't happen, and the fact that Lashley won to begin with, it just surprised me as a whole. But it was a good matchup, definitely, to open up the delayed start to WrestleMania 37 Night 1. We also had Tamina and Natalya winning the Tag Team Turmoil match by eliminating the Riot Squad to receive a Tag Team title match the very next night against Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax. And I was happy for the both of them. I was happy especially for Tamina because she finally gets a little bit of a WrestleMania moment that she wasn't able to get previous years, despite all of these years of being with the WWE, because she came in around the same time as the Usos did, and having gone through all these years and, you know, not really getting a WrestleMania moment. Hell, she hasn't even had a women's title run, actually, I believe, in all these years, or a title run of any kind. So the fact that she got at least a WrestleMania moment like this, I was kind of happy for her, you know. Obviously, of course, they ended up losing the second night, but still, you know, the fact that you ended up winning at WrestleMania, you know, that's something that can really stick. Cesaro defeating Seth Rollins. This right here was perhaps the catapult that could see Cesaro finally getting into the main event picture. Not necessarily, you know, championship picture, but at least being taken seriously as a singles star. And I know fans have been clamoring for them to finally pull the trigger on Cesaro for years. You know, the biggest knock against him is the fact that he just hasn't been able to show any sort of charisma. whatsoever. And the fact that, you know, they're finally giving him an opportunity here with him defeating Seth Rollins, which is probably the biggest win of his career because of the fact that it's at WrestleMania and a wrestler with the star power of Rollins, you know, that's probably the biggest win that he's had despite him winning previous championships in his career so far in the WWE. We also saw AJ Styles and Omos defeat the New Day for the Raw Tag Team Championships. And, man, the size of Omos, good God, is he gigantic. Especially especially in the ring as well when he's actually in a match. And now AJ Styles becomes a Grand Slam champion in the WWE. I don't think anybody you know, ever thought they would see that, especially after the WWE took so long to sign him to begin with. So the fact that he is now officially, you know, a Grand Slam champion is a huge accomplishment for him, especially considering the fact that he's been in the WWE now for about 5 years after debuting in 2016. You know, we're finally... We're seeing the AJ Styles that should have been with the company all these years, and they basically never signed. They dropped the ball with him so many times on potentially signing him, allowing TNA, you know, to keep him under contract all those years, and now, you know, this tag team title win just adds to his resume. Braun Strowman defeating Shane McMahon. I don't think I have seen a spot like I did in that cage match where somebody has made direct contact from the top of the cage onto the mat below. You know, without something to break their fall, like a table or something. I don't think there's ever been a spot like that. Where they've hit nothing but the mat. And Shane, man, every time he has a WrestleMania match, you know, you kind of think that he's going to basically kill himself at some point with the spots that he does. But this was a pretty good match as well. You know, Braun Strowman tearing through the cage with his bare hands to get Shane McMahon back in the cage. And then they do that spot from off the top of the cage, and you know Strowman ends up picking up the win. I mean, it was clearly obvious what, you know, that Shane McMahon. There's no way he's going to beat Strowman to begin with. Shane was basically in there just for the spot, essentially, and you know maybe perhaps this is a sign that maybe Braun will be more involved in the main event scene going forward, considering the fact that he was working with Vince's son. And usually when you work with Vince's son, usually that means that Vince is high on you. You know, and he feels that you're somebody that he can go to work a certain match that he knows that you're dependable, basically. Bad Bunny and Damian Priest defeating The Miz and John Morrison in a tag team match. I got to say, normally when you see a celebrity, we mentioned this earlier when we were talking about boxing. You know, normally when you see a celebrity wrestle, you know, they do one or two spots and whatnot and don't really get involved. Bad Bunny, he took this shit seriously. You know, he worked throughout a large portion of the match, basically, getting his ass kicked by Miz and Morrison. He did do quite a few different spots as well where, you know, somebody could potentially, if nobody knew who Bad Bunny was as a celebrity, people could mistake him for being an actual wrestler. You know, he looked like he definitely fit in. I read that he definitely earned a lot of the boys' respect in the locker room. I mean, it was a tremendous match for a celebrity getting involved. 15-minute match, and he was in there for most of the match as opposed to his opponent Damian Priest. So this is definitely a tremendous match for him. And you know, I think that if we could get, if there is going to be celebrity involvement in the WWE, if we could get more, you know, more celebrities like this who will actually take it seriously, you know, maybe perhaps it'll be more of an enjoyment as opposed to just, you know, as opposed to just maybe just a throwaway match to where the celebrity does a couple of spots and then they end up winning. Oh, looks like we have a little bit of an injury scare here. It looks like the left ankle, I think, or maybe it's the, I forget, I don't know if it's the left or right ankle. I think it might be the left. The left ankle of Steph Curry is giving him problems. He ended up having to cover the ball, I think, for a jump ball or maybe a timeout because he is limping now. Looks like he tweaked his left ankle there from what it looks like here. Bianca Belair defeating Sasha Banks for the SmackDown Women's Championship. I don't think I've seen more of an explosive finish in regards to back-to-back-to-back moves than this match with Bianca Belair finishing Sasha Banks off the way that she did. It was definitely a great matchup between the two. You know, everybody knew that Bianca Belair was going to win anyways. You know, it wasn't really a shock to those who have been following how WWE has built her up, you know, throughout this whole entire run. So it was the most logical, you know, conclusion for her to end up defeating Sasha Banks. And kind of feel bad for Sasha. You know, this was her first long-term championship run on the main roster. I mean, hell, she held the title, I believe, for about, let me just double check the time frame here. She held the title for about 167 days, which is by far her longest championship reign that she has had on the main roster ever since moving up from NXT. So, you know, this was just the time though for Bianca Belair to be given her championship opportunity here, and it was a good way to close out night one for WrestleMania. Night two started off with Randy Orton surprisingly defeating The Fiend in a little under 6 minutes, with basically Alexa Bliss showing up covered in some sort of black substance. I want to say it was black blood that they intended it to be, I guess. I don't know. But the gist that I got from this match was, with The Fiend basically restoring himself back to, you know, back to full health, being, you know, the regular Fiend. I mean, I'm cold. Oh, we got a serious problem here with Golden State. Anderson went crashing over the scorer's table in Boston here, and he has not gotten up. He knocked down several monitors, and he is in pain, tremendous pain, after saving a ball from going out of bounds here, and he took quite the hit over the announce table here. And he still, it looks like he still isn't Yeah, Toscano Anderson went flying over the scorer's table. A ton of concern right now on the Warriors' sideline, and he is still down. That does not look good at all. And it looks like they're calling over for medical attention here. They're showing the replay, so yeah, he's still down. Meanwhile, Steph Curry continues to work out his ankle here, but that is a nasty, nasty fall. Hopefully, we can get an update here once this is all settled out. But the Golden State Warriors, they do have a slim 2-point advantage, 103-101, over the Boston Celtics with about 5.5 minutes left to go in the game here. Looks like Anderson is up. He is covered, though, with towel, so maybe perhaps his head might be bleeding. I don't know. I don't know what's going on here. But he is walking off with with help from a member of the Golden State Warriors medical staff. So hopefully everything checks out for him, and he ends up not having to miss any time here. But that was a tremendous save that he made on the baseline there. But back to Randy Orton and the Fiend. It kind of makes me think that with the Fiend being resurrected, makes me think that Alexa Bliss may have been resurrected as well, or reincarnated, I should say, as Sister Abigail. Because Sister Abigail, for WWE fans who may not remember, Sister Abigail seemingly disappeared when Randy Orton essentially set Bray Wyatt's house on fire with one of the previous feuds that they've had in the past. And, you know, Sister Abigail was never really mentioned after that. So a lot of people thought that maybe perhaps, you know, Sister Abigail is now officially back, reincarnated in Alexa Bliss, with the Fiend essentially being resurrected at WrestleMania with his regular attire. But it just seemed kind of odd now that Randy Orton seems to be done with the Fiend, and now the Fiend is going into some sort of program with Alexa Bliss. I really don't know what to make of it, but yeah. It was an incredibly short match to kick off night two, and kind of pissed off some fans, actually, because, you know, a lot of people were expecting a full-fledged match. And while we did get some sort of action in this match, it wasn't really what a lot of people were expecting. Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler defeating Natalya and Tamina by technical submission, with Shayna Baszler winning by the Karafuta Clutch, I think is what they call it, submission. That basically, it's kind of odd, you know, how they book Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler, to where they book them to lose on Raw and SmackDown, yet somehow win and retain their titles on the pay-per-view. But I guess it's how they look at Vince's philosophy, is that it doesn't matter what you do on the nightly or on the weekly shows on Raw and SmackDown. The only thing that matters is what you do at the pay-per-view. And the fact that, you know, they put on some of their best stuff during the pay-per-views, I guess that's the reasoning to keep the championships on them. So honestly, I don't even know if there is any team that could really realistically take the titles off of Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler without Jackson Baszler imploding on each other, basically, pretty much. Kevin Owens defeated Sami Zayn with Logan Paul in Sami Zayn's corner. Logan Paul then received the stunner after the match. This match kind of went as expected, you know, very, very fast paced. It was finished in less than 10 minutes. No, not really much of a surprise here. Everybody figured that Kevin Owens was probably going to beat Sami Zayn, like what has happened in each of their previous encounters. And I was kind of bummed, though, you know, that we didn't get a big spot out of Kevin Owens compared to what we're used to seeing out of him at WrestleMania. So I know he definitely wanted to jump off of the pirate ship, but because they did have a pirate ship set up for the stage, as opposed to the pirate ship that's already there to begin with. They had an extra one set up specifically for the stage, and I definitely figured, and I believe a lot of people probably figured that they were going to do something with that, which I guess apparently it was just used for some of the pyro or something like that. But this match went as expected, although I guess some people may have expected Logan Paul to eventually turn on Sami Zayn. That, of course, ended up not happening. So, yeah, you know, not really much of a surprise here. Sheamus defeating Riddle for the United States Championship was a bit of a shocker, because a lot of people expected Riddle to have a longer championship run. But I think what probably happened here is the fact that Matt Riddle, at a recent episode of Raw, ended up forgetting his lines. And I think that this may have been punishment for doing that in Vince's eyes. And basically the punishment, you end up losing your championship at the biggest stage of them all. And I definitely didn't see Sheamus getting a United States Championship run. So this came as a big surprise for me in this matchup. Apollo Crews defeating Big E in a Nigerian drum fight for the Intercontinental title. Not really shocked. I do like, though, that they brought back Dabba Kato, as it seemed like, you know, he was originally introduced to be on the Raw brand as part of Raw Underground. And of course that ended up going nowhere with the Hurt Business essentially, you know, putting Raw Underground to rest, and that left Dabba Kato with basically nothing to do. They ultimately ended up bringing him back as, I guess, Apollo Crews' General Aziz, I think he's called or something. I don't know. But basically the Nigerian drum fight had a whole bunch of drums with kendo sticks and stuff like that at ringside. And yeah, there was a lot of usage of the kendo stick in this matchup, and relatively short, less than 7 minutes. Apollo Crews ends up winning with the help of General Aziz, or as Raw Underground fans may know him as, Dabba Kato. So, I mean, it's the only thing that really made sense to give the title to Apollo Crews so that they could continue their program between him and Big E. Because otherwise, with Apollo Crews losing to Big E again, it wouldn't make sense to continue the feud after that. Rhea Ripley defeated Asuka for the Raw Women's Championship in about a 13.5-minute match. A lot of people expected Ripley to probably win this, because not a lot of people expected Asuka to have as long of a title reign as she ended up having to begin with. So, you know, the fact that Rhea Ripley was able to take the championship off of her, you know, it made sense to a lot of people. So now Rhea Ripley with the Raw Women's Championship It looks like she's probably going to take on first Asuka in a rematch, and then I assume Charlotte Flair is going to get involved, as Charlotte ended up returning this past week on Raw with some sort of bitching and whining promo or something like that. I don't know what they're doing with Charlotte. You know, she maybe it has something to do with the fact that her boyfriend Andrade ended up request his release and ended up getting granted his release from the company. I don't know. I don't know what the hell they're doing with her, but you know, it did feel odd that Charlotte ended up missing this year's WrestleMania, because she is by far, you know, probably the best women's competitor on the roster. So the women's division kind of felt a little empty, not having Asuka in the, not having Charlotte in the, WrestleMania this year. Roman Reigns defeating Edge and Daniel Bryan by pinning both of them at the same time. Not going to lie, did not see this coming whatsoever. Especially considering the fact that they added Daniel Bryan into the mix. And if the big question that I have here is, what was the point of even adding Daniel Bryan into the picture? A lot of people thought that, okay, the WWE, they want to keep Roman Reigns looking strong. So the way to do that would be for him to lose his championship. If he was not going to win, the way to do that would be for him to lose his championship without getting pinned. And obviously that would be giving Edge the championship by having him pin Daniel Bryan, you know, without having Roman Reigns having to get pinned. So that kind of shocked people. It shocked me as well. And it kind of pissed off our producer, Jim, actually, because Jim and I were commenting on the night, the two nights, actually, throughout this whole thing. And the biggest thing that he mentioned was the fact that Roman Reigns is supposed to be being booked as a strong heel, but yet he cannot win a match without having his cousin, Jey Uso, having to get involved and basically winning the match for him, which it is a legitimate gripe. You know, if you want to book Roman Reigns as strong as they are, you know, I kind of get the point that, oh, heels, you know, they don't always have to win the match clean. You know, something ends up having to happen. But if you want to book Reigns as this strong, dominant competitor, you know, you have him do it by himself. Don't have him have to rely on somebody else to win a match when he would be able to do it himself. So, you know, it kind of takes away from his win, even though they said it was a dominant win, you know, to have him pin Edge and Daniel Bryan at the same time. Yeah, but he also received help from his cousin. So it takes away from it. Although I did like that they brought in the concerto. They had Edge give a concerto to Daniel Bryan, and they also had Roman Reigns do a concerto to Edge as well to end the match, essentially. And I just love it. Every single time Edge has introduced a concerto during his partnership with Randy Orton all the way back then, you know, it really added a little bit of extra stuff that, you know, they were missing, basically. So It added a little bit of extra to Edge's character, I should say. I should put it that way. But I mean, the match was good. The only gripe about it is the fact that, you know, okay, if you're gonna have apart from Jey Uso having to consistently interfere like this, if you're gonna why put Daniel Bryan into the match if you're just gonna have Roman Reigns win anyways, you know, it just doesn't make sense whatsoever. Unless it was just to give Daniel Bryan one last WrestleMania main event, considering that he does not, from all reports, he does not have that much longer left on his, you know, when it comes to his wrestling career. JB, I believe, are you joining us?
Yeah.
All right, I'm sorry because we had a troll call in earlier tonight with the same area code, and it seemed like it was the same number as you,
Whoa, same rest of your number.
So I originally thought it was you, and then, you know, it was basically some troll who we were talking about basketball at the time, and then they end up mentioning a certain private part of a certain player, and that's when we ended up getting rid of them. But glad to have you on the show for the final hour here. I understand you and Jim. You know, you guys were talking for quite a bit after the One Wolves podcast.
To about what was it? 2:30, something like that.
Jeez, yeah, I was far passed out at that point. You know, from the fact that obviously I have to get up early to begin with. Wow, what a shot by Curry! You know, I had to get up early to begin with, and, you know, obviously, you know, this week, considering I'm on vacation for this whole week, you know, I'll probably be able to stay on for the long haul this week. But, yeah, it was one hell of a show, though. You know, we basically went from talking about One World to talking about a whole bunch of different reality shows, even bringing up politics at one point as well.
And talking about COVID too.
Yeah, and talking about COVID, exactly. So it was a pretty good show. Let me look here. Lou, it looks like Lou did not get back on here. He didn't end up getting back on. So, I guess he had his other show that he had to go to tonight. But it's good to have you on here, JB. I guess you've probably heard about the Logan Paul fight that's supposed to, or not Logan, the Jake Paul fight that's supposed to take place tonight. Jake Paul against Ben Askren, former UFC contender Jake, or Ben Askren, might I add.
It seems like this is going to be a fight where, I don't know how to put it. Where Ben Askren will actually, I think, put this guy away.
You know, I sort of said the same thing earlier that, you know, Paul, he's fought two scrubs to begin his boxing career. And, ooh, actually, first off, we have Steve Cunningham against former UFC heavyweight champion Frank Mir for this fight card here. So, Frank Mir, you know, I'm sort of going back here with Frank Mir that, you know, granted, it's going to be a sort of boxer against a MMA star. You know, a lot of people think that just because, you know, it's boxing that, or, you know, because they're an MMA fighter, that because they're not consistently boxing like professional boxers do, that, you know, they don't nearly have enough power or nearly enough stamina to compete with professional boxers. And while that may be true, you also got to remember that it's not like these guys can't knock out somebody either.
Oh, they have the ability to put somebody away.
Yeah, because you have Ben Askren, who is actually, believe it or not, he's knocked out more fighters in his career than Frank Mir did. Mir only had 5 knockout wins in his entire career, and most of them came after, during the Lesnar years.
Right.
So the fact that, you know, he's now, this is sort of playing into the whole thing with both him and Ben Askren fighting in boxing tonight. You know, just because you're fighting a pro boxer, and I say pro very lightly with Jake Paul, because you're fighting a pro boxer, you know, that doesn't mean that the MMA fighter isn't going to be able to put him away. And by the way, this has gone final now, what we were talking about previously before you joined. The Boston Celtics with a 119-114 victory over the Golden State Warriors. The Celtics improved to 31-26, with Golden State falling to 28-29. So the late game surge by Golden State, not enough to topple the Boston Celtics tonight, with Boston moving up to the 4th seed in the Eastern Conference. But yeah, you know, what I was mentioning when it comes to boxing, you know, just because you're an MMA fighter going into boxing doesn't mean that the MMA fighter isn't going to be able to knock out the boxer. Because keep in mind, MMA fighters, they have boxing coaches as well.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Frank Mir, on the other hand, he's standing at a gigantic 276 pounds tonight, severely overweight compared to what we're used to seeing him at. So, you know, maybe perhaps we're not going to see a knockout out of Frank Mir tonight, but especially with MMA fighters, you can't take them lightly, basically. Because if we've learned anything from MMA, all it takes is one strike to land at a certain spot.
And I think one of your best boxers would have been heavyweight Junior Dos Santos.
Probably, yeah. Although it's unfortunate, you know, that Junior Dos Santos is no longer in the UFC. But, you know, if he went into boxing, probably has that sort of angle on his punch, where he could do legitimate damage to a pro boxer if he wanted to.
Yeah. He's one of the few that could actually go from MMA to boxing, whereas there's not really too many boxers that could go from, even though there are, they're not too many boxers that could go from boxing to MMA. I think there's more MMA fighters that could go to boxing.
Yeah, especially considering that, you know, if you're a boxer, you know, you're usually only fighting on the feet. You're not used to fighting on the ground and whatnot. So that would, of course, be, you know, a much different conversation as opposed to you know, an MMA fighter heading into the world of boxing. Because if it's an MMA fighter heading into the world of boxing, yeah, all they need to do is just stay standing, basically. And I mean, granted, obviously, of course, you know, maybe perhaps they're not taking more shots in MMA as opposed to what they would in boxing, but, you know, it's still a combat sport. So
right.
They're still taking that punishment that they would in boxing. I gotta say, good God, does Mir have a gut on him ever since he left the world of MMA. Either that, or maybe it's just the camera making his body look bigger, but he looks gigantic right now compared to the shape that he usually fights in. The one thing I am noticing about this fight, JB, is that Mir clearly does not have the speed advantage here, and I think that is one thing that, especially considering, believe it or not, he's actually fighting a cruiserweight tonight, who's fighting at heavyweight. And this cruiserweight boxer is right now putting Mir to work, to severe work, in this matchup.
Where are you watching this fight at?
I'm watching it what's it called? Triller, I guess it's called, but it's also on WMR. And it's on, I don't know if you still have the Sports Access info I gave you, but it's on Sports Access also.
That one
on,
with the, UFC.
I can give you the info if you need it. Hang on one sec. Let me find... and by the way, ignore the password, the vulgarity of the password, I should say. It's not my my account. So let me bring that up to you. All right, I sent it to you, and go to when you access it, go to channel 71, and it should be on there.
Whoops! I clicked the wrong
gassed right now.
Tab.
What a flush right by Cunningham here. He is definitely getting taking a lot of deep breaths right now. We're about two rounds into a six-round fight right now. Let's see. While we're waiting for you to get that set up, JB, a little bit of baseball news. The Twins and Angels games have been postponed this weekend due to COVID-19 issues. It was reported that Kyle Garlick ended up testing positive from the Twins for COVID-19. At least one other player also tested positive for the virus. So today's scheduled game was postponed, as well as tomorrow's scheduled game being postponed between the two clubs as well. Nationals left-hander Luis Avalon suffered a tear in his left UCL And the veteran reliever is now going to weigh his options in deciding how to address the injury, according to manager Davey Martinez. He's got options, apparently, whether to sit out and see if it heals or potentially having to undergo Tommy John surgery. So we'll see where that goes. The Milwaukee Brewers, they have placed Christian Yelich on the injured list due to an ailing back. Eric Yardley has now been recalled from AAA to take Yelich's spot on the roster. Yelich's placement on the injured list is retroactive to a couple of days ago on April 14th, so it should make him available to return for the Brewers next weekend. So basically this is just to give him a little more time to heal up his injured back, from all indications here. Cody Bellinger of the LA Dodgers reportedly has a hairline fracture in his left leg. He, of course, has not played since April 5th, and it doesn't appear that a return is imminent. A recent test that was done on his leg revealed a hairline fracture, according to manager Dave Roberts, and it is. He added that it is not a day-to-day thing. He has been on the 10-day injured list since April 9th, which was retroactive to April 6th, which at that point it was believed that he only had a left calf contusion. So it is unclear as to how much more time he may miss, but I guess maybe there's the potential that he could be out for possibly the next month, depending on apparently it says normally it takes 6 to 8 weeks to completely heal a hairline fracture. So probably won't be seeing him till the middle of May and maybe perhaps June for the Dodgers.
Now, on this Sports Access, it's wanting me to launch the web player or launching the classic.
You can do web or classic. Yeah, you can do web or classic. I would do web, because then you can search for, you can go to the little magnifying glass on the site. Click that, and then you can type in like boxing, and it'll give you a list of all of the channels that are going to be showing.
Okay, it's got
you can then click on one of them.
Okay, it's got the it's got the fight on there right now. I'm trying to have the sound too loud.
Look at, well, I can't really hear it right now on your end. So look at how huge Frank Mir is.
Oh, I know it.
I mean, I don't think we've really ever seen him that big outside of the UFC. And Chuck Liddell is actually there at ringside right now. I don't think we've ever seen him being that out of shape.
Yeah.
And they said he's fighting at like 276 or something tonight, I think it was.
I read someplace where he actually is like 70 pounds heavier than this other guy.
Yeah. Steve Cunningham is weighed in tonight at 206. So Mir's around 70 pounds heavier. In MMA, Mir would be fighting in the super heavyweight division right now at this weight.
He wouldn't even be allowed to fight in UFC.
But it seems very clear right now that Cunningham definitely has the speed advantage. I mean, you could see just from watching that Mir's taking these deep breaths. You know, obviously MMA fighters, you know, they're not used to fighting three round spurts like we're seeing here tonight in boxing. And I mean, you kind of have to think that Ben Askren will be in a much better situation, considering the shape that he keeps himself in. And to me, this just kind of screams that Frank Mir needed a payday. And, you know,
yeah,
was willing
exactly.
to was willing to basically box in order for this in order for him to get this payday.
If this guy,
I mean,
if this guy's like, if this guy's a boxer, he should be able to put Mir away. But then again, with Mir's weight,
they say the bigger they are, the harder they fall.
Oh yeah. Yeah, this
and
guy
actually,
could just
Steve,
running, yeah.
Go ahead. Now, Steve, you know, Steve Cunningham, he is actually a former title holder in boxing. He held the Cruiserweight title. Yeah, he held the IBF Cruiserweight title twice between 2007 and 2011. And he has also fought in the heavyweight division. His most recent loss, actually in the cruiserweight division, his most recent loss was to Andrew Tabidi 4 years ago. This is a guy fighting his first fight in 4 years. And so far, it's looked like he's outstruck, at least from my eyes, from what I've been watching, he's outstruck Mir in these four rounds so far. And for the most part, Mir has basically been trying to, trying to get a hold of him and basically hug him like some boxers do, you know, to try and tire him out, I guess.
Huh. My brother was texting me that the Jeremy Stevens isn't fighting.
Yeah, Jeremy. This is odd. I was gonna bring this up next. Actually, this is really odd. Jeremy Stevens. He was supposed to fight Drakkar Klose, and they ended up having some sort of shove at the weigh-ins, where Stevens, I guess, shoved Klose, and he ended up suffering a cervical sprain as well as a concussion as a result of that shove.
Huh.
Which I didn't see I saw the shove, but it didn't look like it was really, you know, if anything, he was hobbling a little bit. It didn't look like there was really much of, you know, anything that would prevent the fight from taking place.
Right.
You know? But
dummy me, I haven't been watching the weigh-ins for UFC in a while.
No, I haven't either, honestly. Not since they started doing them early in the day, as opposed to they used to do them. I believe they used to do them the Friday before at like 5 or 6 in the evening.
Yeah, they used to have a big thing, especially when they had the numbered fights. Joe Rogan would actually, be there.
Yeah. Oh, now Mir is resorting to haymakers. You saw those two missed haymakers. That seems like what he's resorting to right now with these attempted power punches. But it said, according to Klose, he felt his hand. This is where it gets weird. It says he felt his hand go numb and his neck tightened up following the shove. After spending the rest of the day eating and rehydrating, Klose says he woke up with a migraine. And then UFC officials pulled him after he vomited.
Hmm.
All from a shove. I mean, to me, it just doesn't seem right, you know?
Well, you know, me, I've never been put in that situation, so I really can't say, you know, that.
Well, I should say, I'm not saying it's not right, you know, that they take the fight off. I mean, obviously it makes sense. You know, you don't want a fighter
right.
In that condition to have to fight that night. But it just seems kind of odd that just a shove would do that.
And it must have been, you know, some kind of shove too, not your ordinary little shove. I don't know why they put the word shove in there. Maybe it was, you know, worse
well,
than
was
a shove.
It was a shove, technically.
Yeah. I'd like to see Cunningham just all of a sudden, boom, and watch Frank Mir just fall to the ground. That would be funny.
So to add on to this whole acid trip of a boxing event, I don't know if you can hear him at all, but Oscar De La Hoya is completely shit-faced right now. Like legit drunk on the on commentary.
He probably is.
Either that or he snorted a whole bunch of cocaine in between fights. I don't know, but it's... I mean, just like I said, this has been this whole entire event has been an acid trip. You should see, you should have seen how it opened up, JB. They had Snoop Dogg talking with I think Justin Bieber. Then they had a three-man commentary team of him, Diplo, and Pete Davidson from Saturday Night Live. They opened up the show with Snoop Dogg smoking a blunt with Steve Urkel, and I shit you not, Jaleel White was dressed like Steve Urkel with the glasses and everything. I mean, it was.
I'm surprised he didn't. I'm surprised Snoop Dogg didn't come out with his Corona.
I mean, this is just the weirdest shit I have seen for a boxing event. I mean, I kind of understand maybe perhaps this is, you know, this is supposed to be for celebrities. So they have to add some sort of, I mean, hell, a lot of the stuff tonight was, believe it or not, this is like the third or fourth fight, I think, tonight, ever since the show started. And actually, this is the second fight since they even went live on pay-per-view. Like they had a free portion of it that went that had like two fights on it, the undercard, or not the undercard, the pre-show, if you will, the pre-event, and then ever since this started at 9 o'clock. For the main fights, they've only had two fights, and they've had like maybe four musical performances. I mean, I feel like I'm on an acid trip right now with everything. Either that, or I'm extremely drunk, about as drunk as De La Hoya, with what I'm viewing.
Yeah, I've seen Cunningham. I've seen Cunningham getting Mir up against the ropes. You see Mir just kind of puffing away.
Just laying on him.
Yeah.
First off, I'll just say this right now. I believe Steve Cunningham has the win. I'd be shocked if it's given to Mir, considering the amount of laying that Mir has done on him. I mean, Mir got hit with a whole bunch of flush shots in this fight. By the way, an update on Juan Toscano-Anderson from the Celtics game. It turns out he did receive some sort of a cut from making that miracle save of the ball, from preventing it from going out of bounds, and he ended up going. He ended up basically crashing over the media table that they have at basketball games. And of course, he ended up being taken out of the rest of the game. Which of course the Warriors, they ended up losing. But he ended up getting up and having to be escorted off of the court with a whole bunch of towels on his head. And it turns out apparently he did suffer some sort of a cut, on the head during that whole entire process. So, I don't know of any, you know, I don't know of any other reports, but it was a pretty scary situation, JB. That's all I'll put it, because he was on the ground for quite a bit of time. Yeah, you know, even looking at they just showed the scorecard. I'm even shocked that Mir even won one round in this fight. I'm serious, because it just looked like Mir got severely punished in the body, and you know, Cunningham was just all over him for the most part, with Mir fighting like a drunk for the most part here. So I don't know. See, how many more fights are there actually on this card? Let's see. We got Regis Rice against Ivan Redkoch, and then we have Jake Paul versus Ben Askren as the main event. Jake Paul, obviously coming off of a knockout that produced many internet memes of Nate Robinson, which I actually still have those on my phone. I may post them again later on tonight. Of Nate Robinson basically knocked out right on the mat. But I think Paul is going to have a much different time against a much harder time against Ben Askren tonight, considering Askren is actually a professional fighter.
I actually turned off the boxing thing.
Oh,
it was accidental. It was accidental, and I don't want to put it back in.
I don't blame you, honestly. I really don't blame you with all the shit that they're showing here, a whole bunch of filler for the most part.
One thing that I was going to bring up last week, and that is, well, I was going to bring up the Cincinnati Reds last week, because I saw a couple sites that had them rated like about, I don't know, about 25. And this was at a time where the Reds lost their first game, but then they won their other six games. They were, I think they had an average of like about 11 or 12 runs per game.
Yeah, they're actually one of the league leaders in runs scored so far, and they're currently sitting at 9-5 in the leading the NL Central. And they did beat Cleveland earlier today in extra innings. So the Reds,
right,
they're definitely on fire right now, which is actually
a little bit
of a shocker.
I was watching that game up until about the eighth inning, and I think it was 2-1 then. And I think I got a thing on my telephone about, I guess this was about maybe an hour later. It said final, Reds 3, Indians 2. And I thought, whoa, they actually pulled it out.
Yeah, in 10 innings. You know, JB, you know what's probably even more surprising? You know, not just the Reds' start to the season. I'm kind of a little bit of biased here, but the Boston Red Sox, after starting out the season 0-3, they went on to win their next 9 games. They, believe it or not, they're actually the first team in Major League history to do that specific thing. To go on to start out the season getting swept, and then to win their next 9 games.
And I was reading about the Yankees, how shitty they're doing.
I don't know what it's... kind of bizarro world we're in right now, but the Yankees they are sitting in dead last in the AL East right now.
Yeah, they said they haven't been doing this bad for about, what, almost 20 years?
Yeah, and actually they're almost in dead last in the entire major leagues, period. The only two teams that may be worse than them are the Colorado Rockies and the Arizona Diamondbacks. I mean, it's very weird to see, you know, a team with a payroll as big as the Yankees have, and
yeah,
they're struggling to put up runs and to, you know, actually keep things close. But
and it's weird,
you know,
and it's
of,
weird to see a team like the Reds doing as good as they're doing.
I know, especially considering their past seasons, where, you know, it's just really weird watching them go from the cellar to now all of a sudden seemingly being a legitimate threat in the NL Central.
And then one other thing I have to bring up too. This is only it's not even May, and we have the whole summer to go. So anything can happen. Even though they've only played not quite 15 games, it's like they could go down to the cellar in no time, and hopefully they don't.
Yeah, you know, obviously things can end up changing on the drop of a dime, honest, in all honesty. You know, there's a lot of variables that can happen. Milwaukee, you know, they're just trailing them by only a game right now. St. Louis by 2 games. So I know they say, you know, not to really pay attention to any regular season, to any early starts in the regular season. But usually you can get the kind of feeling, what kind of season you're going to have, of how the team starts out. And
yeah,
it's an encouraging start or an encouraging sign that, you know, the Reds are starting out like this when normally you're used to seeing them in the cellar of their division. I mean, their run differential is plus 27 right now, which, taking a look at the rest of the league, only the LA Dodgers are better in terms of runs scored compared to runs allowed. And right below them actually are the Boston Red Sox with a plus 26. So It's, you know, it's really weird taking a look at some of the early starts to the season at some of these early records. I mean, you got the Miami Marlins, you know, who had a good season last year, and they're at 500 right now. The Philadelphia Phillies, they're at 500. The New York Mets, you know, they're at 6-4, which is kind of a shock considering that. And you know what? I was right. I told my uncle today that Jacob DeGrom is he had three straight innings of nothing but strikeouts today. I told him that, you know, the Mets were going to, you know, Jake DeGrom was going to be this dominant, and he still wouldn't get the win. And once again, we're seeing that exact same thing here.
And if you look at the NL Central, except for a few teams, you could almost, like last season, you could almost flip it upside down.
Yeah, exactly.
Except
you know
for
what?
A
this
few
just...
teams.
Yeah. You know, real quick, JB, this just came up on my screen here, and I can't believe that it's already about to take place, but next Saturday night, talk about a stacked main event card for UFC 261.
Oh, yeah.
You got Anthony
Smith. There's three title fights next week.
Yeah. Not just that, but you got Anthony Smith and Jimmy Crute to open up the main card. You got Uriah Hall and Chris Weidman following that. Then you have Valentina Shevchenko defending her women's flyweight title against Jessica Andrade. You got Zhang Weili against Rose Namajunas for the strawweight title. And for the welterweight title, you got Kamaru Usman, who's been acting as a trainer to the current heavyweight champion, Francis Ngannou, taking on Jorge Masvidal in a rematch.
And I'm liking that women's strawweight. I'm liking that Chinese girl, that Zhang Weili.
Yeah.
I'm kind of liking her. I'm more or less pulling for her to keep her belt and beat Rose Namajunas.
Well, yeah, she's currently undefeated in the UFC, going a perfect 5-0 so far, defeating Joanna Jędrzejczyk in her last fight. She also has wins over Jessica Andrade and Tisha Torres as well as Jessica Aguilar. So she has beaten some pretty big names in the strawweight division.
Yeah, I liked when she beat Jessica Andrade for the strawweight championship.
No, she beat.
And that was.
It was Andrade. I thought she beat Jędrzejczyk for the title, but no, it was Andrade.
And I liked it too because they were fighting in China.
Yeah.
So that was fitting.
Yeah, they've held a lot more events ever since they've been able to fight in China. They've tried to hold more events there. I don't think have they fought yet in Japan.
I don't, except for some early fights like back in. The 90s, I'm not familiar with any fights in Japan.
Huh. I don't know. Oh, actually, you know, earlier today, I'm just seeing this now on Jim's Twitter timeline. Joey Votto turned a triple play for the Cincinnati Reds.
Yeah.
It's not that often that you see a triple play take place. So
really, it was the first.
He's fighting again.
Who is?
Arlovsky.
Yeah.
Jesus. Against Chase Sherman with 12 first round finishes, I'm not liking the where this is going here. I think we're about to see Arlovsky get finished yet again. And we also still got Robert Whittaker against Kelvin Gastelum as well tonight.
Yeah, that's the fight that I want to see.
That actually could have some implications for the is it the middleweight division or wait, hang on. Yeah, for the middleweight division, that could have some implications because Whittaker was actually one of the I forget where he's ranked right now, but he is one of the top rankings, I think.
And with Arlovsky. His record really hasn't been that good compared to his earlier years.
Yeah, but I don't want to see him get punished again. Like, you know, with him getting older and he just lost by submission his last fight.
Yeah.
You know, I just this just really seems like we're looking at a potential first round knockout here with in regards to Sherman.
And his last fight was only 2 months ago.
Yeah. No, not Sherman. Sherman last fought in. Oh, you're talking about Arlovsky.
I'm talking about Arlovsky.
Yeah, I was gonna say Sherman hasn't fought since 2020. Sherman actually, yeah, he hasn't fought in about a year. But his last fight for Sherman, he knocked out Isaac Villanueva by technical knockout with an elbow and punches.
If you look at some of the guys that Sherman's fought, if you really want to get down to it, he hasn't fought anybody. But then again,
no.
This is only his second UFC fight.
No, he has fought previously. He got released.
Okay,
he
did.
From the UFC. He got released from the UFC and he fought in island fights, but I mean, it's just the fact that, you know, Arlovsky, with him getting older, he's 42 years old, you know, who knows how much of a chin he has left. And this guy has 12 first-round stoppages, you know. It's obviously Arlovsky, he isn't fighting in the same condition that he previously has fought at in his UFC career.
Right.
And when you think about it, Arlovsky, you could kind of argue, hasn't really fought anybody either since he lost to Jarzino Rosenstreich back in 2019.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I haven't heard of Philippe Lins or Tanner Boser. You know, it just kind of sucks seeing a UFC legend like Arlovsky have to go through all this punishment like this. I mean, there was one stretch from 2018 to 2019 where he lost four consecutive fights. One of them was overturned because Walt Harris had tested positive for a performance enhancer. So that was changed to a no contest. But, I mean, he had lost to Tai Tuivasa, Shamil, I'm not even going to pronounce that name, Walt Harris, and Augusto Sakai before beating Ben Rothwell and then losing to Jairzinho Rozenstruik.
Yeah, he can beat Ben Rothwell.
Plus,
I think that was the second.
He suffered devastating losses as well to Stipe Miocic, Alistair Overeem, Josh Barnett, Francis Ngannou. You know, it's
Alistair Overeem.
You take all this punishment as you get older, and it's almost like, how much longer are you gonna actually go through this? Because you could argue ever since he came back to the UFC and had that four fight winning streak over Brendan Schaub, Antonio Bigfoot Silva, Travis Brown, and Frank Mir, you know, ever since he for the upper echelon of UFC fighters in the heavyweight division, he's just gotten his ass kicked ever since.
Yeah.
I mean, hell, since 2015, he's only won like five times. You know, it's almost like at some point you're kind of expecting Dana White to, you know, eventually
let
him
go
and give him the same talk that he gave BJ Penn, which was, you know, don't make me have to release you.
And the thing with Arlovski, though, he's winning and then he's losing. He's winning and he's losing. He hasn't really lost a lot in a row compared to those fights, earlier. Not like BJ Penn, where he was, I think he lost, like, what, four fights in a row or something like that? He lost a couple, and then he won, and then he lost some more, and then he won one, and then he went on a four-fight losing streak.
Oh, it was more than four. Hang on. I'll bring it up here right now. I know for sure it was more than four because it was at one point that people were joking that he was basically the local drunk going into every bar that he can run into, and which actually it's not really a joke. It actually is happening. Trying to fight anybody that he can. And actually, looking at his record right now, he is on a 7-fight losing streak right now.
Yeah.
Losing to Nick Diaz, losing to Rory McDonald, getting knocked out by Frankie Edgar, getting knocked out by Yair Rodriguez, losing to Dennis Seaver, getting submitted by Ryan Hall, and then losing to Clay Guida.
Losing to Clay Guida.
Yeah. You know, his last win was over over the hill Matt Hughes. So, you know, this isn't the same BJ Penn who was on top of his game and was the lightweight champion.
Right.
So, my cousin used to put it like this. There are two types of BJ Penn. There's BJ Penn who is on top of his game and is literally a legitimate threat like he was in his early career. And then there's the type of BJ Penn who is overweight and literally does not give a shit, which was during his two fights against George St. Pierre and Matt Hughes back at UFC 58 and UFC 63, which was all the way back in 2006. It's like,
yeah,
it
that was before
on
me.
Kind of, it's like, it depends on what kind of BJ Penn you're going to get. You know, are you going to get the BJ Penn who actually cares about the fight, or are you going to get the type of BJ Penn who literally doesn't give a shit? You know, that will really determine what type of fight you're going to get. So,
and I've always wondered why they called him the Prodigy.
Well, think about it. Early on in his career, beating Dean Thomas, Kyle Uno, Matt Serra, he ended up losing, of course, to Jens Pulver by majority decision for the lightweight title back in 2002. But then he beat the likes of Takanori Gomi. He went to a split draw,
Matt Hughes,
against Kyle Uno. He beat Matt Hughes. He beat Dwayne Bang Ludwig, which, even though Ludwig's his record may not speak of being a successful fighter, you know, being 21-14, but Ludwig, he's probably one of the best boxing coaches in mixed martial arts.
And
so,
Rodrigo Gracie too.
Yeah, he beat Rodrigo Gracie by unanimous decision in K-1. He lost to Lyoto Machida before Lyoto Machida actually became a star. Then he beat Renzo Gracie.
Yeah.
He returned to the UFC, losing to George St. Pierre and Matt Hughes in consecutive fights, which, once again, like I say, is the not-giving-a-shit BJ Penn. Where he wasn't even in shape. Then he comes back in shape in a grudge match against Jens Pulver, which, if anybody saw The Ultimate Fighter 5, you will know why. Beat Jens Pulver by submission, beat Joe Stevenson by submission after basically draining all of the blood out of Joe Stevenson's body from that one cut. That was probably that probably still today is one of the bloodiest fights I've ever seen in the UFC. Then he beat Sean Sherk by a TKO with a flying knee and punches. Then he lost to GSP in the potential title, the chance to become a two-division champion. He beat Kenny Florian. He beat Diego Sanchez, before losing back-to-back bouts against Frankie Edgar in what were very competitive bouts. And then he beat Matt Hughes. And it just seemed like
it's gone downhill.
Yeah, he wasn't the same BJ Penn, basically, after those two Edgar fights. I mean, yeah, he knocked out Matt Hughes in 21 seconds, but, you know, Matt Hughes at that time didn't even have a chin left. So it wasn't really much of a victory, basically.
Really?
And then Matt Hughes ended up getting knocked out by Josh Koscheck his very next fight, which ended up being the last fight of his career. So, you know, it's not really much that you can say when you knock out an over-the-hill Matt Hughes at the end of his career, for the most part.
Hey, Beans, we have like a minute left. Do you know if Jim is going to have a podcast this coming week?
He has not contacted me. I think if we are going to have one, he will let me know probably tomorrow, I would assume. And probably the advertisement will go up Monday or Tuesday potentially, because I assume if there is one, it'll be on Thursday.
Okay, because I I think both of us tagged Eddie, and I sent him a text, and I sent him a message too on Facebook. He sent me a text the next day saying that he had to that he was sleeping early in, and he said, you know, next time call me like 8:45 or something like that. And I said, okay, I'll call you and I'll let you know, what we're going to be talking about.
All right. Well, anyways, you know, if there is going to be a podcast, I'll probably know by tomorrow, and there will be the advertisements will probably go up Monday or Tuesday, depending on when Jim wants to do it. But anyways, that's it for tonight. Thank you to Lou and JB for joining me. We will see you guys for Sports Whispers Weekly. We will see you guys next week, next Saturday. Everybody else, have a good rest of your weekend, and we will see you guys later.